boss, he's looking for me. He says it's time to go to work, but I'm out on the sea.
Welcome to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio. Today we have a very, very, very important program. What we're going to be talking about today has an effect on everybody that spends time in the water, that enjoys fishing, enjoys the outdoors, and is responsible, because anglers traditionally have been probably the real true conservationist. And, you know, we're not going to get too far into politics, but mankind is definitely having an effect on the planet. And when we talk about in the United States for, I don't know, first of all, let me introduce Sam and Lauren. Dr. Sam Dover and Dr. Lauren Everett. We're going to be kind of giving a little bit more about them in a second. But for 10,000 years, the people that lived in the United States seemed to survive just fine, and they understood how things worked, and their population was smaller, but they had very little impact on the land. Well, things have changed a lot since 1776, and in particular with the population and the industrialization. But what we're going to be talking about is what is happening and how it affects the planet and what we can do about it. First of all, let me introduce two very, very esteemed people. Let's start with Sam Dover, who's a doctor of veterinary medicine. But it's a lot more than that. Sam, why don't you give us an idea? I know what your specialty is, and I know the what you're doing. It's your 501c3. So give us a real quick overview of what you're doing and give us an idea about what your background is.
All right. Thanks, John. Yeah, I'm a veterinarian, and I've been practicing marine mammal medicine exclusively for about 29 years now. I used to work at a little place most of us have heard of called SeaWorld. That's where I got my background and where I basically learned the beginnings of the craft. One of my passions when I was at SeaWorld was the stranded animals and what was occurring in the wild, rather than exactly what's occurring in the park. The park we could manage. But the wild is a totally different place. And my long-term goal in life was basically to understand the causes of stranding, why it happens, what it occurs, what can we do about it. And as such, about, like you said, 10 years ago, I started a nonprofit, a 501c3, called the Channel Islands Marine and Wildlife Institute. We're located in Gaviota, which is near Santa Barbara, and we specialize in marine mammals, mostly seals, sea lions, whales, and dolphins. We also deal with entanglement issues, that is, large whales that get caught in fishing gear, and it's typically, you know, like crab pots or shrimp pots. Not your traditional recreational fishing gear is the problem. It's more the commercial. And then we try to mitigate those causes, research them, and share our information with other people and educate the public on what we can do about it.
And there's certainly been a lot activity lately, hasn't there?
Yeah. Last year was our highest year ever. We had 137 animals on the year at the end of December. And right now, and you know, we're only into November, well, we're in December now, we're at over 360 animals. So double that number and then some. And a lot of that is related to essentially a loss of the fish supply in our local waters due to a temperature change of the water.
Mm-hmm. And also, Lauren Everett. Let me just say a couple of things because I know you're don't like to talk about yourself a lot, but maybe you can give us a fill in a little bit. But just a couple of quick overview. Lauren is first of all, for 28 years, has been the chairman of the World Federation of Scientists Panel on Pollution. So I think that gives him some credentials. He's also a Chancellor Emeritus from Lakehead University in Canada. He is a gold medal awardee from the Russian Academy of Science. He's also on a committee that advises the papacy on geological world events. So anyway, give us, why don't you explain it yourself, because you do a much better job than I do.
Well, thank you, John. With respect to the involvement with the Vatican, the World Federation of Scientists is centered at CERN. the home of the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva. It's headquartered by Dr. Antonino Zucchicchi, science advisor to the Pope. And so we as a group work on planetary emergencies that range from AIDS through nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. And one of those planetary emergencies is global warming. And so every year for the last 28 years, we've had some of the best and the brightest in America and around the world come to Italy looking at global warming issues. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I chair the World Federation of Scientists panel on pollution. So I'm looking at the chemistry, some of the biology, and a lot of the physical attributes of what happens with global warming, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people that are listening to us are going, oh, yeah, so what? You know, these guys are heavy hitters. You know, what's interesting about that? Well, what we're going to do in the next for the rest of the show is we're going to cover what is interesting about that, because there's so much information that's put out by different people with different agendas that what we're going to try and do today is cut back to true science. Try not to be political, but sometimes I can't help myself. What can I say? but there are problems. Some of the problems are different than what's perceived, but there are definitely problems, and hopefully there's some things that we can do to mitigate that. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the next couple of segments. So we've only got a few minutes left in this one, but let's go back to Sam, because he was mentioning about the warm water that's occurring in the Pacific. Now, people on the East Coast, they may say, so what? But it affects them also, doesn't it, Sam?
Yeah, pretty much everything that occurs in the ocean eventually comes back to Earth, you know, that is land. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, the ocean is a indicator of what's going to happen in our world, in our future. And what we're seeing right now, the reason we had so many animals this year is because of a water warmer temperature, which drove the bait fish further away. For example, the Channel Islands near Santa Barbara, in our area, has a large population of marine mammals, mostly seals, sea lions. There's about 26 different species of marine mammals seen here reliably. And it's an incredible resource because we have a currents mixing. So we've got a current from the north called the Alaskan Current and a current from the south called the California Current. And they hit the Santa Barbara Channel and they cause upwelling. And that upwelling is a large nutrient source that essentially is a food chain from micro scopic organisms all the way up to the largest animal ever on Earth, the blue whale. Mm-hmm. These animals are seen here routinely throughout the year. And, of course, there's some seasonality. But what we saw this year was because of the warmer water, it drove the bait fish further away from the islands where the animals breed and feed. Mm-hmm. So the females, the adult females and the sea lion pups, had to essentially, the females were gone for longer periods of time to forage, so they could come back and then feed their young. Mm-hmm. What was happening is these pups are underweight, significantly parasitized, because there's a lot of parasites out in the real world. And so that's what's caused this problem in the increased number of animals. It's called an unusual mortality event. The reason why, we didn't know at the beginning, but now we do know. It's basically a simple starvation because the bait fish moved further away from the feeding sources.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as anglers know, where the bait is where the fish are.
And that's why locally you're starting to have all these fish, mm-hmm, typically found in Mexico and further south, mm-hmm, in our area. Mm-hmm. And so the fishermen are loving it, and the sea lions aren't.
Yeah. Well, I see. Exactly. Yes. But now this, you know, this phenomena is not just in this area. Just as an antidote, last year at the end of September when Hurricane Odell hit Baja, worst in history, Category 4. The water temperature previous to that was, right before it was coming in, was 91, 93 degrees. In Alaska last year when we were fishing in Ketchikan, the normal water temperature is 52 to 54. When Ken and I were out in the water, it was 61 and 63. So this is big. There's no question about it. Now, we're going to have to end this segment real quick, but we're going to come back and let's see if we can get down to some real science. We appreciate that. And has a lot to do with angling, but everybody should be listening to the show. We are listening to Fish Talk Radio. We'll be right back, and of course you can listen to the show as many times as you want on fishtalkradio.com. Now, let's go.
them up. Picking them up. Yeah, picking them up.
Time to head back to the barn. You too, Murphy.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
S-A-N-D-O-S is how to spell luxury resort in downtown Cabo San Lucas. Santos Finisterra Los Cabos is the only five-star all-inclusive on the beach next to the marina in Cabo San Lucas. Angler-friendly Santos Finisterra Los Cabos is now an affordable world-class resort with the finest accommodations, food, and location anywhere. Enjoy your Cabo fishing adventure as you never have. Visit Santos.com and use discount code FISHTALK.
World-class golf, fishing, and diving in the clear, warm waters of the Sea of Cortez with a true five-star resort. The Grand Heritage Hotel and Resort at Costa Baja, great value and without the hustle of other parts of Baja. On the white sand beach with Espiritu Santo's Island minutes away. Signature restaurants, pools, and accommodations for an intimate weekend, weddings, or corporate events. On the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
It's time for you to take a real fun adventure. Join a hosted fishing adventure to Alaska or Baja with the staff of Fish Talk Radio. Real Fun Adventures can book you on any adventure you desire. Bring your fishing friends or meet new ones. Fish Talk Radio gets the best deals from our sponsors to give you the best possible price. Real Fun Trips are inclusive, easy, no-worry packages to the most popular fish grounds. Trips start around $600. Go to reelfunadventures.com.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
I got out my shovel and went out to dig some bait. Got a pail with some worms and I headed for the lake.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio with Dr. Sam Dover and Dr. Lauren Everett, who we talked about in the earlier segment. Now that hopefully you know who they are and how qualified they are, what we're going to do now is I think I'm going to go up and go get some coffee and let these guys take over. I think probably Lauren is a world-renowned scientist expert on the topic that we're going to be talking about, and Sam's a good talker. Why don't you guys just jump right into it? What we'd like to do in this segment, we're talking about the ocean. It's not more than just about fish. On a planetary basis, the ocean is extremely important. And, you know, what's happening to the ocean, we mentioned the warming effect, which I don't know if we have anything to do with or not. But let me just go ahead and let Sam take over and maybe ask some questions to Lauren and go ahead and talk about it.
Well, I think Lauren can really start this conversation, and I'll just pose the question to Lauren that will help get this motivation or this conversation started. And essentially, I'm the end user. That is, I see the animals that are the end result of what's occurring in the water. Lauren is a hydrologist. He understands water. That's his whole life. And so basically, let him tell us what's occurring, and I can tell you the examples.
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Sam. Well, this past August in Italy when I invited Dr. Dover to come and speak to the World Federation. I had orchestrated our seminar on the subject of our dying oceans. And so I invited the best that I could find around the world to come to Italy and to talk on that subject. And what came out of the presentations was the realization that the number of dead zones in the ocean are asymptotic in terms of the number of locations. And then the obvious question is, well, what's a dead zone? And the answer to that is that when you have too much pollution entering the ocean, much of that pollution makes results in algal blooms, and those algal blooms result in a lot of uptake of oxygen from the bacteria that eat the algae as they die. And as the bacteria use up all the oxygen, then the water becomes anoxic, and nothing can live in it, and it becomes a dead zone. So as one looks around the world at all of the major rivers that discharge into the ocean, we're finding these increasing levels of dead zones, and they are growing exponentially. And so what's causing all of that are a combination of agricultural runoff and discharges associated with municipal treatment plants. And the culprits that are being discharged are primarily nitrates and phosphates. And these are the main nutrients for algae. And the algae, therefore, grow tremendously, a phenomenon referred to as eutrophication.
Is that like what they call an algae bloom?
An algae bloom, yes. Mm-hmm. Eutro meaning well, mm-hmm. trophic meaning nourished, mm-hmm. well-nourished. And this results in these anaerobic zones, and that then causes a huge shift in the population of fishes. Now, with respect to an earlier comment that Dr. Dover made about how we get nutrients coming up from the subsurface, those nutrients typically happen during times of what's referred to as turnover, where the deep water that is rich in nutrients comes into the shallow waters that allow fish to grow out in areas where they don't have too much nutrients. So the deserts, the ocean is typically a desert. That's how bad it is, except in the coastal areas. Hmm. But with global warming, what happens is we get these much warmer waters. They tend to stabilize and stratify. And when these warmer waters at the top stratify, then there's no opportunity for these deep nutrients to come up and to provide the food for the algae.
The top column of the water has less nutrients in it.
It has less nutrients, mm-hmm. therefore less algae, therefore mm-hmm. less food, mm-hmm. and therefore all of the
less fish,
yeah,
and less mammals. Yeah. And that would also, Sam, is you know what you do is the algae bloom also causes something else.
That's exactly right. There's good algae and there's bad algae, and one of the bad algaes is. Well, I can bore you with the scientific name. It's Pseudonychia australis, but it's also called. It creates a toxin called domoic acid, and currently, as we speak, on the entire West Coast from Alaska all the way down to basically Mexico, there is a limit. You cannot eat, that is, humans mm-hmm. are not allowed to eat
shellfish.
Shellfish, exactly. Clams and crabs and that sort of thing, because they are loaded with this toxin called mm-hmm. domoic acid. And what domoic acid does is it affects the brain. It literally hits the hippocampus. The hippocampus is a part of your brain where you develop memory and spatial awareness.
Oh, well, maybe that's my problem.
It could be. Maybe you eat too much crap. But in sea lions, we see the perfect example. Mm-hmm. In different years, we see some more than others. And what happens, these animals show up on the beach, they're disoriented, they're having seizures, and it can ultimately kill them. And the brain damage is permanent. And basically what it does is they lose their mental map. These animals are used to traveling around at certain areas, and they know where they're supposed to go. And when they lose that mental map, they are disoriented. So when they go to the islands for breeding, then they don't know where to go. And then also, this can be transferred from the mother to the fetus. And then so we get a lot of pups that are what we call dummy pups.
Let's go back a little bit and talk to Lauren about, you know, we know this is happening. But you're talking about primarily runoff, Lauren, is that right?
Primarily runoff from agricultural operations
and from
intentional discharge from cities.
Okay. Can you give some kind of examples of that? And is that possible something that we can minimize or reverse?
Well, I guess the best example is Mississippi River. The mouth of the Mississippi River is arguably the largest dead zone in the world. And it's caused from all those discharges
all the way across
America.
Oh, yeah, 1,000 miles.
One likes to think that America is a leader in the environmental arena, and I think we are. However, even with the best technology that we're using currently, we still have these discharges and we still have these problems. Now, there are many, many developing countries and some rather large ones like China, where we don't have any of these environmental regulations, where the discharges are uncontrolled and enormous. And so the impacts to the ocean, I think, are increasing. To respond to your question, what is there anything we can do? I think absolutely. I think the science associated with it is well established, how to get nitrates and phosphates out of discharge water. It's just that it costs money, and there's a reluctance to pay the money. And in developing countries, since they have no environmental regulations, there's
no
motivation, and they're just not going to do it.
Right.
So it's not a good prognosis relative to the health of the oceans.
Now, also, there's, and Sam, you might comment on this, too, because it's not just agricultural. Well, we can talk about heavy metals, which is something that we should probably discuss, too, which is, you mentioned China and developing countries, because the they don't have a lot of natural oil and gas. They have coal. And when you're, you know, you're trying to increase your industries and feed the people, you use what you got. And coal, you know, traditionally, you know, was, you know, has been used for a long time. But it, I think that the amount of it's being used, but the controls they put and the filters they put on it, in the United States at least, have really mitigated that. But why don't you comment on how that's happening in the rest of the world?
Well, what we see in a lot of these again, I use marine mammals as an indicator of the ocean health, you know, because they're at the top of the food chain. They eat the various fishes. They are the ones that are the ultimate consumer of what's occurring in the ocean. Yes, we love to catch our fish and we love to eat our fish, but they rely on it. And what we've learned over the years is all the industry, for example, in the North Sea, and a lot of this industry was in the early 1900s, and of course during the Industrial Age, a lot of these heavy metals, the ocean was just a dumping ground. They would just dump pollutants and solutions into the ocean. These things are what we call POPs, persistent organic pollutants. And they work their way up the food chain gradually to the point where the marine mammals become the ultimate repository of these toxins, specifically heavy metals, organophosphates, organochlorines. What that does is that affects their immune system, and their immune systems are now weakened, and they become susceptible to viruses that they normally could fight off. And we have so many examples of that over the last 30, 40 years, and finally now we're beginning to understand why.
Okay, well, we're going to have, you know, probably hours to discuss this, but we've only got a short period of time, and right now we've got less than a minute. Quick question. The amount of heavy metal, mercury, et cetera, in the oceans now compared to, let's say, 150 years ago, what's...
I would say, well, Lauren can probably answer that better than I, but I'm guessing 100 years ago it was next to nothing, and now it's huge.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we're going to leave that on that, and we're going to take a break. You are listening to Fish Talk Radio, and it's important to understand that we have fishtalkradio.com, and I think this program is important enough that you might want to share it with your friends. Go to fishtalkradio.com. Right on the front page, you'll find it. It's real easy. You can listen to it as many times as you like. But, you know, it is something topical. We're going to do another segment, which is something we rarely do, but this is so important that we don't really have enough time to cover it. And coming up, we're going to be talking along the similar subjects, but let's see if we can get more into some of the things and maybe some of the things that we can do to help mitigate this. So you are listening to Fish Talk Radio, and we have two of the foremost real scientists. These are not the opinionated people. These are the real deal about what we're going to be talking about. And you are listening to Fish Talk Radio. We're going to be taking a quick break. Go to fishtalkradio.com and listen to the program again, and tell your friends.
The road stretches for miles in front of you, and with the Ram 1500, you'll be able to reach mile after open mile. It gets a best-in-class 25 miles per gallon highway, so your destination won't just be determined by your gas gauge, but by your gauge for achievement. And the Ram 1500 is the first ever back-to-back Motor Trend Truck of the Year. Guts. Glory. Ram. See your local Ram dealer today for great deals. EPA estimated 25 mpg highway based on V6 4x2.
If you like the show you are listening to right now, you can listen to it and many more just like it on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Fishing, hunting, boating, and the rest of the great outdoors, 24/7, 365 on Reno Viola Outdoors Radio. Download the free Reno Viola's Outdoor Radio app or visit WRVORadio.com online to see the lineup and schedule. That's Reno Viola Outdoors Radio, and enjoy the great outdoors.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAJA.
The East Cape of Baja, Mexico is world famous for sport fishing. Dorado, tuna, wahoo, marlin, sailfish, roosterfish, and pargo. The Van Wormer resorts make dreams come true at a price all can afford. Hotel Palmas de Cortez, Playa del Sol, and Hotel Punta Colorado have the biggest and best sport fishing fleet in all of Mexico. Call toll free to 877-777-TUNA to find out how affordable world-class fishing can be. The finest resorts and the best boats in East Cape. Call 877-777-TUNA.
First named La Paz in 1566, the fourth largest municipality in Mexico still has a provincial Mexican atmosphere. On the Sea of Cortez, the most biodiverse body of water in the world, La Paz has year-round world-class fishing. With a rich history of pearls, pirates, and legendary fishing, La Paz in Baja Sur makes for the perfect fishing vacation. Spring in La Paz, you catch trophy pargo, giant yellowtail, and sierra. Find more at VivaLaPaz.com. Viva La Paz!
Bass Angler Magazine simply brings you more. If you want to learn the latest technique, start winning tournaments, or just catch more bass, then Bass Angler Magazine is for you. Go to www.bassmag.com, click on the order link, and use the promo code FBR. Go to www.bassmag.com, Bass Angler Magazine, bassmag.com. It will be the best $20 you've ever spent.
All fish, Maple Lake, French Lake, Grand Lake, Cedar Lake, Pleasant Lake, Clear Lake, Bass Lake, Otter Lake, Goose Lake, Gull Lake, Round Lake, Bear Lake, Rice Lake, Sugar Lake, Mud Lake, Long Lake, Ann Lake, Swan Lake, and Lake of the Woods.
Oh, welcome back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and unless you just tuned in, you missed a lot, so you've got to go back to fishtalkradio.com and listen to the whole show. We have two very distinguished scientists in with us today, and we're talking about something that is extremely important. Obviously, to the anglers and people that enjoy the water. But it's a lot more than that. And I would say, let's kind of start off, Sam, with good news, bad news. El Nino is a fact. And, you know, I would say that, a long time ago, I predicted, because I could see last September when in Cabo and La Paz, the surface water temperature was 91, 93 degrees. No one had ever seen that before that lives there, that's still alive. And as Hurricane Odell approached land, normally a hurricane will dissipate as it approaches land. This one kept increasing because of the water temperature, I assume, and became the worst hurricane in recorded history. So with that, and then what's been happening after that, and I mentioned in July when I was up in Ketchikan, the normal water temperature is 52 to 54. It was 90, or it was
60.
It was 61, 63. So obviously there was something happening, and this is something that starts way south and goes way north. Now, it's kind of a good news, bad news thing. When it was down in the end of September in Baja, the fishing wasn't so good because all the bait had moved north. But off Southern California, it was like being in Baja. The fishing is great. So kind of depending on where you are and what happens, and of course we're looking forward to getting a lot of rain out of this El Nino effect this year and on the West Coast because we need it. But let's kind of talk about that a little bit. Sam, if you don't mind, you want to take over and give us an idea about what it is, what causes it, and what effect we have on that. Okay, Lauren? All right, let's do
sure.
that.
Well, El Nino is driven by unusually warm waters. Those waters are associated with the west coast of South America, around mm-hmm. Peru.
The Pacific. Mm-hmm.
And in the Pacific, certainly. Mm-hmm. And the temperature jump as recently as last month was 5.4 degrees.
Above normal.
Above normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the largest ever.
Wow.
And so the term we're seeing is a monstrous El Nino. That's the vernacular that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. However, in recorded history, there's been six El Ninos that we know about. Two of those resulted in rainfall events that were below normal. Mm-hmm. Two of them were at normal.
And now, when you say recorded history, that means since we've been able to track it?
Since we've been tracking El Ninos. Mm-hmm. The two of them have been above normal. Mm-hmm. So although this is the largest recorded jump in temperature, one is never sure whether it's mm-hmm. going to be a gusher or not, but everybody's getting prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what causes an El Nino? I mean, is it because we're putting gasoline in our tanks? Is it because we're, you know, burning down forests? Or, you know, what effect do we have on that? What causes it?
My understanding is that it's a function of the currents and the weather mm-hmm. in that area.
And the sun, the jet stream. Yeah.
And rather than having a circulatory pattern associated with the water, we get a lateral migration of the water that results in this huge specific area of warm water that mm-hmm. Dramatically affects the wind currents mm-hmm. and changes the rainfall patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I would say that definitely falls into the category of climate change. But is there anything that humankind has done to create this?
Well, I think climate change is a part of that,
mm-hmm.
But I think climate change is much broader in terms of mm-hmm. The issues that are associated with that. It's an embarrassing time, or it was an embarrassing time in looking at climate change because all of the models that predicted the result of the increasing carbon dioxide level that went from 380 degrees up to 400, not degrees, 380 parts per million up
okay.
to 400 parts per million, mm-hmm. that was supposed to have a dramatic change in the temperature globally.
Mm-hmm.
The temperature is going up only slightly, but for the last 15 to 17 years, it really hasn't gone up.
The global temperature has not gone up? Is that what you're saying?
That's right. There's been a lot of climate change, but mm-hmm. globally we haven't seen that. And they're trying to figure out why. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is that the models have not been successful in predicting what the temperatures would be.
Mm-hmm.
So climate models are very, very complex. There's a lot of variables that need to be measured, and at the moment, those models are having a problem. There's obvious climate change going on, but it's not behaving relative to what the models say should be happening.
Mm. So I guess we don't know as much as we thought we might thought we do.
I think that there's a lot of very bright people working on the problem, but I think the complexity of what's driving it is
globally. There's no simple answer.
The input data is not there. There's too many variables that need to be measured more accurately.
Well, and again, you know, one of the things that we hear a lot about is people. And again, I try not to be political, but sometimes I can't help myself, is that to me, there are people that have taken this man-made global warming as a religion. And what we're doing today is trying to, you know, talk about it in a scientific way. So as far as, you know, what's been happening with the El Nino and the climate change, how much control do we really have?
Well, I think we have a lot of control. Mm-hmm. I think that if we look at China, for example, as you pointed out, their main natural resource is coal. Mm-hmm. Their development of the coal is unbridled. Mm-hmm. We're talking at the huge potential for global warming from China. Mm. They don't want to constrain their
economy.
Their economy. But what they are doing is going highly, highly nuclear. China will be the nuclear giant around the world, and those are all
carbon-producing energy. It's efficient and fairly inexpensive comparatively.
That's right. And when they get to the point where they can rely on their nuclear energy, what they're going to do, then they can be more magnanimous and look at starting to clean up some of the contamination that is horrific these days. But. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things that we're doing. In America, we're going towards wind and solar generation, and there's real improvements that we're seeing there, but not anywhere near the stage where
this
can help.
This is probably
us.
Not a fair question because you weren't prepared for it, but it was just I do this a lot. But let's just say we take California, and tomorrow. There's absolutely no industry. There's no carbon-based industry at all, so we don't do anything. And for the next 5 years, how much effect would that have globally on global warming and the environment and the climate change?
Well, California is the seventh large economy in the world. And to put a percentage on that off the top of my head, I couldn't do it. But one needs to realize that there's a lot of things in California beyond just agricultural, beyond oil and gas, things like the pharmaceutical industry and things like the clothing industry. It's hard to believe, but just the clothing industry has an enormous contribution to global warming.
Really?
Yeah, so things that are not really intuitive are certainly a part of the problem that need to be constrained.
Of course, you know, we're all looking for answers. And then, you know, recently in Paris, they're, you know, talking about trying to come up with some global solutions. And, you know, I guess what we're trying to find out is what can be done, how bad is it, and what can we do to try and reverse it?
Well,
I know these are questions that you're probably not prepared to answer.
No. There's a lot of bias that can come out of this discussion very quickly. And one of those biases is that if countries go more towards nuclear, like many of the oil companies are, countries are, if they go towards nuclear, there is no carbon release associated. There's no warming gases associated with it. And so if one was of that ilk, that's the direction you could go. But there are a lot of people that are
very
strongly
much
against nuclear.
John, let me add, there's also a lot of natural cyclical events that occur in the environment and in the atmosphere. For example, a conference I was at just last spring dealing with that, we're dealing with what's called an unusual mortality event. That is an unusually large number of animals showing up for unknown causes. And, of course, then the government will then throw some more money at us to help figure out why. One of the things they're talking about is what's called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. And what that means is the Pacific Ocean, every decade, has an oscillation in its temperatures and its environment. And so some of this is natural. So we can't just talk about about the humans only. We have to look at things that we don't understand, but we are seeing patterns and trends. And these are studied by very, very important scientists.
In my short life, I've come to understand that things do go in cycles. Like pink salmon in Alaska tend to run every other year. And there could be two-year cycles, five-year, seven-year, 500-year cycles. And it all depends on how these things all line up. That has a lot to do with it. And I don't know if there's an explanation to it, but it looks like we're just going to have to wrap this one up real quick. But we would appreciate it if you would go to fishtalkradio.com, listen to it. I think that we've given you some great information, maybe a little scientific jargon, but I think that these guys have done a tremendous job. And they, again, completely unbiased. This is the true stuff, and hopefully we've learned some things from this segment. So we're listening to fishtalkradio.com. Appreciate you tuning in.